Hi, I'm Ruta Sepetys.
And I'm Steve Shankin. We are the authors of The Bletchley Riddle.
A new book for young readers takes a deep dive into Bletchley Park, the British code-breaking factory in World War II. Set in the summer of 1940, this fast-paced historical adventure follows two siblings as they try to unravel a mystery surrounding their mother's death. Written as a collaboration between Ruta Sepetys and Steve Shankin, these authors of historical fiction and nonfiction play up each other's strengths while shining a light on a little-known part of history. I recently spoke with Sepetys and Shankin about the book and their first collaboration with each other. From KMUW Studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network, this is Marginalia. I'm Beth Golay, and here's my conversation with Ruta Sepetys and Steve Shankin. Could you give our listeners a brief description of the book? What is The Bletchley Riddle?
Sure. The Bletchley Riddle is history and mystery. It's a super exciting adventure that follows the story of two siblings, Lizzie and Jacob Novis, who are whisked away to the code-breaking factory of Bletchley Park. And the siblings are trying to solve different mysteries. Jacob is trying to crack the riddle of Enigma, and Lizzie is trying to crack the riddle of the disappearance of their mother.
So how did this project come about? Is this your first collaboration together?
Oh, yes, definitely. Although, unless you count things like panels at conferences, librarian conferences, everything good starts with librarians. And so they would put us together on panels, you know, not literally called here are two history nerds, but basically that. And because that's what we do for the last 20 years, and we admire each other's work. So we just started with the idea of maybe working together on something. It was very undefined. But pretty quickly coming to Bletchley Park. It's just such an exciting setting for a story. And if you're a fan of middle grade, you know, adventure fiction, just think about how many stories and series begin with a kid being whisked away to some magical school. Everyone will immediately think of Hogwarts, but there are so many others. And this is a case where it happened for real. There was a place, you just couldn't make this up, called the Government Code and Cipher School. Would you rather go to Hogwarts? I would rather go to the Government Code and Cipher School. That sounds cool. And these really brilliant young people were whisked away to this countryside estate in England right before the war began.
So this is based on fact. Bletchley Park and the Enigma Machine are real. Can you tell our listeners more about those things?
Sure, I can jump in. It's set during the Battle of Britain, and an old country estate set in Buckinghamshire was transformed into this very top secret code-breaking operation. And the Brits began to recruit a cast of incredible intellectuals, everyone from mathematicians to chess players, linguists, to become code breakers at this secret facility. And Steve, why don't you tell us a bit more about Enigma?
Yeah, that was the enemy. It's this, people have probably seen it either in movies or there are lots of YouTube videos. It looks like a typewriter, but a slightly sinister one, maybe just because when you know what it was for. It was an enciphering machine that really began quite innocently as a business machine. But the German military under the Nazis made it their method of enciphering military and intelligence messages. And really, it's very simple when you think of the cryptography of it. It's just a series of rotors and switches that turn one letter into another. But it does it in such a way that unless you know how the machine was set up, you could try cracking it for, you know, 14 billion years, the age of the universe, and you'll never hit on the right answer. So it did seem like this was an unbreakable code. And the task of our characters and the people at Bletchley Park was to do the impossible.
So how did you decide on this story for your collaboration? Why did you want to tell it to young readers?
We started, Ruta and I started with just a lot of different ideas, and some of them were terrible. Some of them were good, but much heavier and more, you know, maybe darker. But I think what brought us to this, at least I could speak for myself, was the fact that there really were young people, teenagers working at Bletchley. And we thought, wow. So you have this amazing true story, this quirky Wonka-like code-breaking factory, but you also have the real true story that there were teenagers there playing key roles. So maybe we could write from those points of view. And that's what hooked me.
And for me, there was a hidden history element to it that just drew me in. I had heard of Bletchley Park. I knew of Alan Turing and Gordon Welchman, and I had seen The Imitation Game, as maybe some others have. But Steve mentioned an aspect that I wasn't familiar with, which was there were three Polish mathematicians who were involved. I don't want to give any spoilers, but from the very beginning. And why do we not know that story? Who are these hidden heroes? And that element just fascinated me. So, as Steve says, combined with the fact that there were 14-year-olds working at Bletchley Park who signed the Official Secrets Act and agreed to never speak of this forever. So, that I thought, oh, I'm all in.
So, how did you divide the writing process? Did one of you write Jacob and the other write Lizzie? Because, Lizzie is headstrong and defiant at times, which causes conflict with her brother Jacob. So, I'm wondering if each of you owned a voice.
Yes, exactly. And that's exactly how we broke it up. It felt very natural that I would be Jacob and Ruta would be Lizzie. And I think we just fell into the sibling rivalry, bickering relationship. We love each other, but we fight all the time. And we didn't really do that in real life, but we did kind of take on these roles. And I think that both having multiple siblings and knowing those dynamics really well helped us with those interactions.
And then we also went back and forth, reading each other's chapters, editing a bit. Steve also wrote the character of Nigel, and I love the character of Nigel. And then I created Marion and Colin, Lizzie's sort of sidekick friends. And it was just a natural going back and forth. We can, of course, talk about plotting and how we built the book, but I do think it felt very natural to write these sibling characters.
To that end, how did you keep the story straight if you both were writing separate parts? How did you maintain a through line with the plot?
Well, Steve and I had these epic Zoom sessions, 3 hours, 4 hours sometimes, where we got together and we discussed the plot in great detail. And this is also where we can discuss how our processes differed as writers. I'm sure that people have heard of these terms. You're a plotter or you're a pantser. You either create a detailed plot or you fly by the seat of your pants. And one of us is a plotter. And one of us is a pantser. So imagine these two kind of opposing worlds come together. But Steve's a plotter, and we decided to let's use his method. And we did. And it was so fun because we sat down saying, okay, now what if, what if? And then this happens. But really, and Steve, correct me if I'm wrong, the way I saw it was that we'd come up with these sort of bullet point lists, but then we would kind of go to our separate corners and write the chapters, right?
Exactly. And that's why I do think you're wrong, because it wasn't my technique at all. I'm very much a plotter, but I mean plotter. I mean, if you're going to plot it, just plot the whole thing and figure it all out. And we definitely didn't do that, which I can now say in retrospect was the right thing to do. And I can see why novelists do this, because I feel like we just kind of plotted around the next bend in the road, a few beats of the story. And then, like you say, went off to our corners and wrote. And the beauty of that, and it was a new experience for me, was that the ability to surprise each other. This is what I mean about the sibling rivalry. I really thought it would be fun to say, all right, here's what Ruta thinks is going to happen in this chapter, but I just thought of something better and I'm going to do this. And that's not the kind of plotting that I would normally do. So I thought it was really fun to allow ourselves to be surprised by what was around the next corner. So I feel like that was more the pantser technique. But maybe you're right. Maybe it was a combination of both that we ended up using and feeling comfortable with.
Ruta, I read a quote from you where you talked about how you and Steve, quote, have similar interests and the same obsessive commitment to research. I also like this quote from the acknowledgments. Historical fiction sits on the shoulders of nonfiction. What was your research process like?
Well, I would say that Steve and I are, researchers just as much as we are writers. And that was the other thing that drew us to this topic of Bletchley Park. So there is this Wonka-like code-breaking factory. We had to go there, right? So first, we read a bunch of material that other incredibly talented authors have written about Bletchley Park. There's such a wealth of material. So we combed through that. There were some authors like, Michael Smith, who were kind enough to Zoom with us and chat with us and, run through some details. And we did archival research, photography research, looking at maps, aerial overviews, listening to radio programs. And then we traveled to Bletchley Park, which was magical. Steve, tell them about our trip to Bletchley.
It's worth going next time if you get a chance. If you're in England, it's only about an hour's train ride north of London, and it does feel like walking back in time. The place has been really well preserved for 30 years, at least after World War II. No one knew what had happened there. You know, that was still secret, but now it's not. And they've done a great job of turning it into a museum, but also a place you can really step back in time. It felt like walking into a BBC historical series. There's the mansion that's still there, still creaky and wonderful as always, and huts that codebreakers like Alan Turing and our characters worked in, attacking the Enigma. And best of all, I thought, were the people who work there, a lot of them volunteers, older folks who have worked there for a long time and all know something that everyone else gets wrong. And they just have to correct the record on that one thing. And so we picked up so many details. We thought we had the plot pretty much worked out when we went there, but we picked up so many wonderful twists and turns and little details from actually being there and feeling what it was like there.
You talked about real life code breakers in the historical note at the end of the book, and you mentioned a young man who was an inspiration for a breakthrough that happened in chapter 45. And this is a quote from that chapter describing the breakthrough. It's the moment code breakers live for. There's nothing there, and then you'll find a new way to look, and there it is. And it reminded me of something I heard years ago about, you know, the most exciting thing that you can hear in a lab isn't Eureka, but instead, oh, that's interesting. And at one point in the book, code breaking was described as thousands of hours of calculations, countless dead ends, and a few brilliant mental leaps. The code breakers were so tired all the time. What pushes a code breaker to keep going?
That's fascinating. And these guys were brilliant. John Harivel, the person you quoted who was really young, he was kind of a big inspiration for Jacob, certainly. He was a very young mathematician who was recruited straight out of Cambridge while still a student. And yes, being tired, some of them said that actually, in a weird way, helped. He had this insight. And this was everyone, if they know about Bletchley Park, they know about Alan Turing's machines that he built, which were not quite online yet during the Battle of Britain. So codebreakers had to break Enigma by hand first, and did, through insights like John's. And he says his memory of it was he was half asleep, sitting in a chair in this home that he had rented a room in, and was half asleep, just picturing what it might be like for a German operator to be setting up the machine. And he's later in life wasn't sure if he was dreaming it or just picturing it. And he had this sort of mental leap where he just realized or saw a mistake that this young, his age could be 19, 20 years old. Here's what a kid, he's homesick, he's tired, he's scared, just like me. Here's what he might do wrong. And if he's doing this wrong, here's what it might look like when we see the messages. And that was an insight that just changed everything. And even these much older acknowledged geniuses said, wow, I don't think I ever would have thought of that. It's just one of those moments you just can't plan for. It's just beautiful. And so we, of course, as Ruta says, we're really inspired to honor those real moments in history.
And that was one that we felt that hadn't been honored. And also we were very, very, tight about our time period. This is 1940. There were so many aspects of World War II that were involved with Bletchley, but we didn't want to include them. We wanted to stick to this time period. And I just have to mention how masterful Steve's work is. I'm writing the younger sister, character Lizzie, who's a messenger and she's quirky. Steve had the Herculean task of incorporating and explaining code breaking in a way that readers can understand it. And I include myself. I would get Steve's chapters, and all of a sudden, I felt like I was having a breakthrough. I am not someone who would ever be recruited to Bletchley Park. I would never be allowed beyond the gates. No way. But as I was reading this, I began to understand. And like Steve says, have these, and you said this eureka moment, like, oh my goodness, this is so interesting. Wait, am I really doing it? And we hope that we think that readers are going to have the same feelings as well.
Did anything surprise you in your research?
Many things. The underrepresented role of women at Bletchley Park. When I went in, I wasn't aware that by the end of the war, 75% of the code-breaking workforce and the workforce at Bletchley Park, they were women. And the role of librarians. I mean, this was incredible. The indexing system that they set up, that was fascinating to me. And then again, as I mentioned, these hidden heroes who I didn't feel had been given credit for some of the breakthroughs that happened there. Steve, what do you think? What surprised you?
So much, but you had mentioned a character named Nigel who's 12 years old, and this sounds made up. And if it were made up, you would throw the book across the room in disgust because it's so unrealistic. But it's true that there was a family, including a 12-year-old kid, who lived inside the gates of this top secret code breaking center, and they were the caretakers of this mansion before the war, and they just were kind of, hey, they're taking good care of it. Let's just let them keep living here. So there's this 12-year-old who much later in life wrote a wonderful memoir about what it was like to grow up in this place. And that could certainly be a whole movie unto itself. You know, what it was like to go to school there and try not to tell anybody that, you know, what was about to happen in the war the next day, you know, because he knew before anybody else. So great. Yeah, stuff like that you just couldn't make up. And we kept finding things, and some of them, of course, didn't make it in, but a lot of them, you know, we just said, oh, we've got to use that. We've got to use that.
There was a treasure hunting aspect that I didn't expect. I mean, of course, you know, as I said, there is history and mystery and secrets. I mean, it's a world of secrets. Everyone who entered the gates had to sign the Official Secrets Act. But Steve came across this thread that the, you know, great code breaker, Alan Turing, had cashed in his life savings into silver bars, silver ingots, and had buried them somewhere outside of the grounds of Bletchley Park and had created his own ciphered map. So after the war, he could go and dig up his life savings and he couldn't find it. And it was never found. And if anyone is like me, you know, who loves, you know, a treasure hunt or going out with a metal detector, that fascinated me that perhaps that's still there. And that was a great surprise. So of course, we had to weave that into the story.
Steve, you're best known for your nonfiction books for young readers. And Ruta, you're best known for historical fiction for young readers, but also read by adults. This collaboration was a departure of sorts for both of you. Has the experience altered the forward trajectory of your writing? Do you see more collaborations in your future?
It was a departure for both of us, and in a wonderful way. Like I said, I learned a lot about writing by just not needing to, I guess I learned you don't have to plan every step of the way, you know. But in nonfiction, I think you do, of course, because you can't invent your way out of the end of Act Two, you know, to figure some great twist that you have to go with what really happened and what you can find. And so I love that creative process of not quite knowing what was happening next. And I would love to do more of that.
Yeah, I agree. And the question, though, would be, you know, what would we write about? What could be the next topic? Do we continue? My goodness, there's 5 years of the war, you know, at Bletchley, or do we find another topic to uncover and discover?
What do you want readers to take away from the Bletchley Riddle?
My top thing is always curiosity, and this goes for nonfiction or fiction, is that I think it's a fun story, and hopefully you get caught up in it. Yes, there's some wonderful history in it, but ultimately, I hope it makes you want to know more. Not about everything, but about something. I'm that kind of reader. There's going to be something in there, I hope, that makes you say, ah, I've got to find out more about the hidden silver, how the Enigma machine worked, the history of codes, whatever it is. That's what I hope readers take away.
And we know that our young readers, they're the ones who are going to carry this fading history into the future and honor the people who experienced it. And I was just blown away by the fact that these thousands and many thousands of people would sign the Official Secrets Act and honor that, not speak of it to their spouses, to their family, to their siblings, to their best friends, ever, ever. And I'm hoping that readers read the book and ask themselves, could I keep this secret for the rest of my life? And what is involved in keeping a secret and that sense of honor and duty? And could we do that today? Do we think we could pull that off today? I would love for readers to answer that question.
The book is The Bletchley Riddle. Ruta Sepetys and Steve Shankin, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Beth. This was really fun.
Thanks for having us.
That was Ruta Sepetys and Steve Shankin, authors of the book The Bletchley Riddle, which was published by Viking Books for Young Readers. Marginalia was produced at KMUW Wichita and is part of the NPR Podcast Network. Our engineers are Mark Statzer and Torin Anderson. Our editors are Luann Stevens and Haley Krausen. Our producers are Haley Krausen and Katie Lanning, and our marketing coordinator is Carly Cooper. This is Marginalia, and for KMUW, I'm Beth Golay.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's type.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
Books and Whatnot is a podcast for readers, where we talk about the titles we've read lately and those bookish little discoveries along the way.
You know what, Beth? I have just realized what my favorite new genre is. And my favorite new genre is WTF.
It is.
Listen to Books and Whatnot every month from KMUW, part of the NPR Podcast Network.